2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Boy, what a difference a week makes. A week ago,
yeah.
A little over a week ago, Jeremiah and I were here. My name is Cleon Wall. Jeremiah Jensen here for the Jazz Notes podcast. We were here talking about how bad the Jazz looked after they got blown out by the Indiana Pacers, the Victor Oladipo-less Indiana Pacers. But, you know, a week later, the Jazz play the San Antonio Spurs, you know, a team that's won an NBA Finals before. Of course, this team is not the team that won the NBA Finals.
Little different.
But regardless of that, it was just the opposite. The Jazz win 139. 139, Jeremiah, 105. 139. There were two big storylines tonight. Let me see if you can guess what those two storylines are. Okay, go ahead. What do you think?
Number one, it was Kyle Korver's first game in front of Jazz fans for the, you know, as a Jazz player for the first time in the, I guess, what, 8 years?
Yeah.
So that was cool.
That was too easy. Too easy. Okay.
Okay, so the next one is
probably easy too.
Franchise record 23s.
Yeah.
Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I can go with franchise record 23s or the fact that they shot 61% tonight.
Wow.
From the floor. 60%. Well, actually, technically 60% you round up. From the three-point line, 20 for 33 from the three-point line, 85% from the free throw line.
That's insane.
It's just the opposite to what we saw last week. And you could sit there and say, hey, the difference was Donovan. Hey, the difference was the Jazz have Kyle Korver. But, you know, in reality, if you talk to a guy like Quinn Snyder, and let me play a soundbite from him, I think he says the difference was spacing. They had way better spacing tonight.
Hmm.
And that's what ultimately generates good shots. Donovan got a couple corner threes because he ran to the corner. It's amazing what that'll do.
And by the way, that wasn't a slam on Donovan Mitchell there. It's just they played a lot better tonight.
There was an energy. Look, I mean, you know that we I don't want to throw out excuses for this team. It's been a rough start to the season, and it should have been better. I know the schedule's been tough, but you have to do factor that in. When you're on the road for 18 out of 22 days, that takes its toll. I don't care who you are or how you're traveling. So I think we saw that, and I think it really came to a head last week when they just had nothing. They came home and they had nothing for Indiana, and then the next day they're back on a plane headed for the East Coast. They went to Brooklyn the next day. So, you know, they've had a rough start. They've had a lot of rough travel, and I think they're still trying to figure some things out. The trade was massive, and that happened since the last time we talked. Last time we talked.
Yeah, we haven't talked about the Kyle Korver trade.
We haven't because it happened on Wednesday. And we are seeing instant change to this team. He mentioned spacing. Why is spacing better? I think you have to give Kyle Korver some credit. You got to give him. He keeps teams honest on the perimeter. They can't pack the paint like they were before. I mean, Donovan's trying to do his thing all season, trying to drive through there. And it's like there's three guys that are gumming up the paint. There's nobody to kick it out to other than Joe Ingles. Now you got Joe Ingles, you've got Kyle Korver. You know, if you have Jay Crowder, you throw him out there. You got three guys you have to respect on the three-point line, and Rudy's out there to clean up the glass. And so Donovan can go to work, and he can take guys on the dribble. He can do his thing in the paint, get to the rim, and if it's not there, he can kick it out to his teammates. It's a different flow, and you saw that flow tonight, and it felt like in Charlotte you saw it. It was going for a while in Miami. And it came to a stop in that game for some reason. But you saw tonight, you kind of saw it all come together where everybody played well. Everybody had an assist in this game, by the way. Every single player on the roster that played tonight had an assist. How about that?
38 assists in this game. That's amazing. Rudy Gobert had 10 rebounds in this game. Jeremiah, it was just a good shooting night, and Quinn kind of talked about that. He goes, you don't get these that often. I'm gonna give credit to let me say something, and I'll give credit to BYU head coach Dave Rose. I've heard him say it. I'm sure tons of coaches have said that.
Oh, yeah.
But he said, he says, you've got for college basketball, it's like, well, you got 10 games where you play really well. You got 10 games where you play okay, and then you got 10 games you play well. Let me try this again. You got 10 games that you don't play well, and those 10 games in the middle are kind of the team you are. I think this is one of the games, and you kind of heard it from Quinn Snyder tonight. These are just one of those games where they played, meaning the Utah Jazz, they played excellent tonight. They shot the ball well. His defense, he was still a little guarded on that. He says they need to improve on their transition defense. They're not getting back well enough. But I think he was so happy with how the team played offense tonight that he can gloss over a little bit on the defense tonight. And so he was just happy about that. Joe Ingles, he talked about why they shot so well, and he says a lot of it has to deal with just being unselfish.
We're obviously an unselfish team. We've moved the ball. Sometimes we're too unselfish. I think it's probably the best game we've had of breaking the paint, kicking out, and getting shots.
So he said that, and Donovan said that also. It was probably one of the better games where they were actually able to drive to the basket and actually kick it out to open shooters, and you saw that tonight, and that's reflected in what you talked about, the assists. These guys were unselfish tonight. They were just looking for the open shooter, and that's why they have a record 23-pointers in this game.
That's what they want to do. They want to get in the blender. They want to get the ball moving, right? I mean, Quinn talks about all the time, ball movement, play with the pass. And it's finally happening. There was too many times this year where you saw them struggle. It was because Donovan was trying to force something. It happened in Miami, actually. I mean, the ball was moving in that first quarter in Miami, and all of a sudden the second quarter, the ball wasn't moving. It was sticking. There was too much like solo offense. It just the ball has to move in order for this team to be successful. They have to get it done as a team, and you saw it tonight. Now, I agree with you. What we saw tonight is an outlier. That's insane. They're not going to shoot 60% from three every night. But if you can shoot 45% from three, that's not crazy to think that they could average that. They're still going to beat a team like tonight. They won by what, 35 points?
Yeah.
So if you shoot just 45%, you're probably winning a game like this by 10 or 15 points. That's not unreasonable to expect from this team because of the shooters that they have on this team now. So the spacing. It's interesting. They mentioned the spacing. Driving and kicking. That's Jazz basketball. That's the way they want to play. And we're finally seeing. I saw it in Charlotte. I saw it a little bit in Miami, and I really saw it tonight. The way that the Jazz want to play offensively, and then defensively, you know they can do that. You know they, even though they're not exactly playing the way they want defensively right now, you know what they can be defensively. They can get there. But offensively, they look like the team we expected to see this season.
I think a lot of the success that the Jazz had tonight also had to do with the team they were playing. Kind of alluded to that at the start. These aren't the Spurs that won the championship back in 2014. Just 4 years later, this is a completely different team. And two of their best players, who, by the way, pretty much did not play from the middle of the third quarter to the end of the game. And I'm talking about LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan. And by the way, both those guys actually had good offensive nights. Aldridge was 7 of 10 from the field for 16 points. DeRozan was 7 of 13 from the field with 16 points, but they turned the ball over 16 times on the night. I think more than anything, this is not a team that you can look at and say they're good defensively. This is not a good defensive team for the Spurs. They gave up 139 points tonight. And yes, you can say, well, hand it to the Jazz because they shot well, but I think the other thing is they're just not really that good defensively.
I agree with you. It's not the defense we're used to seeing from a Coach Popovich team, and a lot of that has to do with just their personnel. I mean, you mentioned two stars. They have two all-star players, but everybody else in the roster is just not good enough. They had some major injuries that occurred. DeJounte Murray, this was supposed to be a breakout year for him. He's injured. He's out for the year. Obviously, the trade changed their team dramatically. They're just different, and I worry about that. It's hard to say this. I just don't see them making the playoffs. I think that playoff streak's going to end. This does not look like a playoff team to me. One of the problems I see with the Spurs is they're like the Stone Age, man. So they don't play the way that a lot of teams in the NBA are playing right now. They're not playing. They don't shoot a lot of threes. So tonight, the Jazz made 23s. The Spurs only attempted 22. So they're playing in the post. They're playing the mid-range game. In the year 2018 and almost 2019 here, that's just not what the NBA is right now. And the Spurs are trying to play it old school. And I get it. I mean, it was kind of like, you know, the Jazz with Jerry Sloan and the flex offense back in the day. You got to kind of move forward, and I don't feel like the Spurs are. Obviously, they're playing to their strengths. LaMarcus Aldridge, that's where his strength is. He's a mid-range jumper guy. And DeMar DeRozan's an ISO player. They don't have the guys on the perimeter, maybe Davis Bertans, but they're just not the team that they can play that way. And I think that's to their detriment. I think it's going to keep them out of the playoffs this year. You can see it as you're watching them. That's a problem for them.
So I'm sitting by Ben Dowsett, who works for The Athletic. We're up there and we're talking, and he brings up this insane stat. He goes, only 12 teams, I can't remember the year though, and I don't have the tweet right in front of me, but only 12 teams have either been right at the same mark. I think it's in the past 50 years. I'm totally screwing this up, and I'm sorry, Ben. Mm-hmm. But it's basically only 12 teams have shot as many three-pointers as the opposing team attempted. And so We were really, it was either right there or exceeded. So there was a point where the Jazz had made more three-pointers than the Spurs attempted. So as Ben and I were sitting there, we're like, come on, Jazz, let's see if you can do this and become one of 12 teams, or at least the 12th team. Maybe it was the 12th team that was going to do that.
That's crazy,
but,
though.
Yeah, but unfortunately, yeah, the Jazz only made 23s.
Come on, Jazz, you can do better than that.
And then right at the end, the Spurs jacked up some three-pointers and They ended up attempting 22. The funny thing is, as we're sitting there watching this, of course the game's in hand, and I'm watching Howell Neto drive to the basket for an easy layup. We're like, what are you doing? Come on, jack up some more threes.
We're trying to set a record here.
Yeah, come on. Okay, so the Jazz got the Rockets coming up. We could talk about that, but I really actually want to talk about the Kyle Korver trade. And The reason why I want to do that is that I want to get your thoughts on what you thought of them doing this. When I saw this, I was it's like surprise, not surprise.
Mm-hmm.
They needed shooting. I just wasn't expecting this player to come to the Jazz, even though it's nice to have him back in the Jazz fold. So what did you think about it, or what was your thinking when the Jazz traded for Kyle Korver?
I wasn't expecting it. There was no indication that they were even trying to seek a trade or trying to do anything. As I look back on it, almost immediately when it happened, I was like, oh, this makes perfect sense. Oh, absolutely. It's the perfect time, too. They needed Kyle Korver. They needed a guy that can shoot 45% from three. They needed more shooting. You're watching the Jazz all year. They're struggling to shoot the basketball. So if you're struggling to shoot the basketball, what do you need to do? You got to go get a shooter. And they got one of the best on the market, if not the best. I mean, what a huge, awesome trade by Dennis Lindsay, turning around an asset in Alec Burks and two second-round picks, which is, that's a big price to pay for somebody who's 37 years old and in a first year of a two-year contract. Alec Burks was an asset that, had some value, but Alec Burks was also going to be a free agent in the offseason. Alec Burks is basically a duplication of Donovan Mitchell, where he's not a guy that you think that's going to score from three very often. Not at least not consistently. He's not going to shoot 45% from three. He's going to drive and try to attack the rim and get to the foul line. That's what Donovan Mitchell is, right? So they're able to turn somebody into something like Kyle Korver, which is just perfect. And I think for Alec, it's great too, because he's going to go to Cleveland. We already saw the other night he was playing in crunch time. He makes a game-winning dunk to give the Cavaliers a dramatic win over Brooklyn. He's in a place where he's going to get more minutes. He's going to get more opportunity to prove to the rest of the NBA that he's back. He's healthy, just in time for free agency this summer. It's a win-win for everybody. The Jazz got better, and Alec Burks is going to have a great opportunity. But what a great move by Dennis Lindsay, and at a perfect time. They had to do something.
It's interesting. I know the Jazz needed shooting. I just was hoping for someone else. And here's what, not because I don't like Kyle Korver.
Right.
Here's what I want. I'm like, man, I love Kyle Korver. I just like Kyle Korver like 3 or 4 years ago. That's the Kyle Korver I want. So,
yeah.
And you kind of saw it tonight. As soon as we walked into the locker room, and I'll defend myself here. As soon as you walked in the locker room, Kyle had played 15 minutes, around 15 minutes in this game, 15 minutes and 7 seconds. He played 15 minutes, 7 seconds. We walk into the locker room to get some post-game sound tonight. Kyle's not dressed yet. He's sitting down. He has got his feet in a mop bucket, soaking his feet, okay? And I'm thinking, wow, I remember back the days I was Jenner. But never mind. I'm thinking, okay, I thought they'd have a specialized bucket, but it's a mop bucket. And then he's got, ice on both of his knees. And he just sits there and sits there and sits there while we're interviewing other people. He finally gets up, takes a shower, and eventually he comes back out and he talks to us. And I'm just like, that's the 37-year-old Kyle Korver. All you're going to expect from him is about 20 to maybe 25 minutes a night max.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I don't like from him. The other thing I would say that I don't like from Kyle Korver is the fact that defensively, and by the way, I would have to say Alec Burks defensively was not great either, but Kyle defensively is definitely a negative. When he came in the first time in this game, and by the way, it was exciting when he came in the first time, crowd cheers for him, he misses his first shot, makes his second shot, makes his third shot, everyone's cheering for him, and then he makes a couple of boneheaded plays on defense, and then what happened was is that they decided to put him on Davis Bertrand's. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, and the reason why they're doing that, in my opinion, they're trying to hide him.
Yeah.
They're trying to put him on the least capable guy of making a basket or driving to the basket because laterally, he just doesn't have it right now. He has got to guard probably your stretch four or four if he can while he's out there. Those are the only things I don't like about Kyle. But what I do love about him, yeah, you're going to give up something on defense, but you're going to gain a lot more on offense. And so maybe that all evens out. By the way, one real quick thing. They asked Kyle tonight, what's more difficult for him tonight? Is it more difficult for him to pick up the offense right now or to pick up the defense? He said it's still more difficult for him to pick up the offense right now.
Yeah, defense, I messed up a couple things tonight too, but I think they've made defense here pretty simple. We have Rudy. So it makes everything a lot more simple.
So
he makes a great point.
No, and he does. And he said he was really grateful that Quinn drew up a play for him first time coming in. And though he missed that play, it was a beauty. It was coming off of a screen. He gets the ball. Rudy Gobert screens for him. He misses that shot. But then a few minutes later, not even a few minutes later, like less than a minute later, he buries a three and the crowd's going crazy. There are a lot of pluses to this trade, but it's just a small thing. The Jazz aren't like over the hump yet. They're like, all right, championship team.
Sure.
But they are going to be a better shooting team. And if that's something, that's something. If that propels you into the playoffs, then that's something. My concerns aside.
I'll quickly counter that. I'm not as concerned as you are. Yeah, he's got 37-year-old legs. Yeah, he's played a lot of years in the league. Is he a great defender? No, of course not. They don't need him to be. Does he have to have his legs? Well, for 15 minutes a night, yeah. That's all they're going to ask of him. 15 minutes a night, just like tonight. 15 minutes a night, you score, you hit two or three threes. We're good. That's all you need from him. And that's what they brought him in here to do. If he can come in and provide that for them and shoot 45 to 50% from three, then that's a win. They know who he is. They know he's limited. They know he's 37. But the trade-off to get that kind of shooting on this roster is exactly what they needed. And some of the defensive concerns you have, he makes a great point. Rudy can clean him up, just like he does for a lot of other guys. There's not a lot of great individual defenders on this team. They defend well as a team, and Rudy plays a big role in that. I think that sometimes gets overlooked because the defensive rating is so high, but you have to give Rudy a lot of credit for that. And he makes the job of his teammates a lot easier. He cleans up a lot of mistakes that guys in the backcourt make, and he makes life a lot easier for guys. And he's going to do that for Kyle Korver. Yeah, Kyle Korver is going to be a decent team defender. He's not a great individual defender anymore, and Rudy's going to help him with that. So you take that trade. You take that trade off. They needed more shooting. They're going to get more shooting. Does it help them defensively? No, but Rudy's good enough. They were good enough as a team defensively that they can overcome that. They've got to get better offensively. And this trade makes them better offensively.
One of the things that Spencer Hall, one of our other hosts on this show, said is that he really wanted to see this team stay together the whole season, but that just seemed like it was untenable because of how poorly they were shooting. So my question to you, Jeremiah, is do they make another trade before the trade deadline? Do they try and get one other piece to kind of not propel them into championship mode, but at least get them a lot closer to that mode? Do you think they make one more trade, or do you think they're going to kind of just wait and see how things turn out?
So here comes an old takes exposed moment for this podcast. I'm sure somebody will point it out to me at some point. Yes, I think they are going to make another deal by the deadline.
Okay.
I do. I don't think they're done.
Mark that down, everyone. Jeremiah Jensen says one more deal. You know what? I have no intel on this at all.
I don't either. I'm just saying that's the feeling I get because of where they're at and with the contract situation they have with a lot of guys. They got some expirings. They can make a big move, and there may be some teams near the trade deadline that are ready to sell, and the Jazz will be buyers.
I kind of like to see it. I kind of like to. The hard thing now is kind of like what Kyle talked about. The hard thing now is you've got to bring a guy in, and you've got to try and get him into this system and get him up to speed. So,
like Jay Crowder last year.
The sooner the better.
Mm-hmm.
It would almost be the sooner the better. I don't know who they give up. The first guy that comes to mind is Derek Favors.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's the guy they're going to give up, but that seems to be the guy that you would think that they would possibly trade away just because his contract is not guaranteed next year. So I would like to see them make a trade, but it would be sooner rather than later. I just don't know if there are any teams that are ready to give up on some of their players as of yet, at least a little over a quarter into the season.
Not yet, but they will by the deadline.
True, true. Okay, Jazz taking on the Rockets coming up on Thursday night. 8:30 game on TNT. How did the Jazz fare, Jeremiah?
Well, James Harden's cold.
Yeah,
I saw that. Complaining about the cold. So my prediction is he comes out cold on Thursday night late, and the Jazz get another win at home.
Okay. I think the Jazz get another win at home, too. They're 3 out of 4. Disappointed they did not win in Miami. I thought they should have done that. But
blew
then they come out on fire. They're finally home, you know, for a few games.
Sleeping in their own beds.
It's got to be nice. It's got to be nice. I think Jeremiah and I are ready to go and sleep
in
our beds.
I'm going to go sleep in my own bed. Not your bed, Cleon. My bed.
Don't sleep in my bed. That would be a little bit
Don't worry about
weird.
That. Don't worry about it.
All right. This has been the Jazz Notes Podcast. Thanks for listening to us. You can find us on the KSL News Radio app. Thanks if you're listening there. Or on Apple Podcasts, other podcast providers. Download, subscribe, let us know what you think about the Jazz Notes Podcast. Hopefully we'll have something coming up a little later this week after the Jazz play the Rockets. We'll talk to you soon.